Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Bum, 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 bum. Happy holidays. Happy holidays. While the merry bells keep ringing. Happy, happy wish come true. I totally knew the words.
Bing Crosby,
one of the greats.
Yeah, one of the greats. Well, he's one of many people, I believe, that sung it. But was he the one that wrote it? Who knows?
Probably not.
There's no way to find out.
There's absolutely no way to find out. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. That's right. And by holidays, we mean Thanksgiving.
If you're in the States, Thanksgiving should be coming up, or maybe it's even happening right now, depending on when you're listening to this.
Some people watch all our episodes way after the fact, so it could be summer for them right now, too.
And we're in California, so it's basically summer for us.
That's right, unless you're wearing a sweet Christmas sweater like I am.
That is awesome.
All right, welcome everybody to the Command Zone podcast. You are watching and listening. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we have a JLK special today.
Yes, today we are going to be talking about the most powerful commander decks.
Ever.
So we thought we'd show some love to the more spiky players out there. I guess we're just going to talk. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. Like, some of you are probably mad that we're going to be talking about really powerful decks, but our philosophy, as always, is play the game the way you enjoy. We've been accused of being spikes on occasion, even though we are not as spiky as the competitive EDH scene is. But
no.
It is fun to look at those decks and marvel at, like, the stuff they can do, and it can give you ideas for the more 75% oriented people out there. It's still okay to look at the really powerful decks and be like, they are doing some sweet things. Now, I don't want to take it to that level.
Yeah.
But also, if you do want to take it to that level, it is cool to sort of look at those decks and be like, I want to do that.
Well, think about it this way. I enjoy basketball now that I'm playing it. And I never used to like watching pro basketball because I didn't really have a connection to it. But now that I'm learning how to play and I can watch, you know, the top players make awesome plays, see how their formations are run, you're like, oh, I may never get to that level. I don't aspire to be at that level. But there's a whole lot to learn from it.
You're never going to do like a 360 slam dunk?
Oh my gosh. I just want to under the legs one. I mean, that's like as weak as it gets. But
that's even hard off a trampoline.
I know. Everything's hard.
Everything's hard.
Basketball's tough. But before we get into it, let's talk about our sponsors real fast. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. That's the affiliate link. That's what you're going to type into your browser, into your URL section of your website. And the next time you're going to want to go buy some magic products, singles, sealed product, whatever. Card Kingdom. I love them.
Yep, and the holidays are coming, so make sure that you buy all your gifts using that affiliate link.
And watch out, there are going to be a lot of holiday sales too.
Yeah, true, and you'll be supporting all of our stuff when you do that. Another big supporter of Game Nights, Command Zone, is Ultra Pro. They're one of our great, great sponsors. They also make great, great products. The Eclipse Sleeves we always talk about, but they always have the themed stuff for whatever the newest set is. So right now we've got Iconic Masters themed playmats, sleeves, deck boxes. Pretty soon here we're going to have Unstable.
Yeah.
And all that sweet swag. So
those previews.
Yeah. Keep your eyes out for all that stuff from Ultra Pro when you're at your LGS or using the Card Kingdom link and things like that. We really appreciate all the support. And the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode.
Who's it going to be?
This episode is dedicated to
Ryan, who is on first.
Ryan, you rock.
You rock. All right, let's move right on to the main topic here, the most powerful commander decks. Have you played against many of these, Josh?
Some, yeah. I haven't actually piloted any of these decks. I have played against a few of them.
I'd be too afraid to pilot one. I would not know what to do.
A lot of these are really difficult to pilot, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So I've played against a few of these. There's a couple that I only know by reputation. We should stay right here just as a disclaimer. There's not going to be like a big consensus on what the most powerful decks are. We're going to talk about five of them. And there's going to be people, of course, out there, that's not, why didn't you talk about this one? And blah, blah, okay. We're just going to talk about what are among the most powerful. Maybe there's a few that we're not talking about. Maybe we missed or we don't know about. There's some, with Protean Hulk coming out, there's a bunch of...
Oh, right.
With Protean Hulk becoming unbanned, not coming out. There's sort of a bunch of decks that use Protean Hulk now that I'm not as familiar with because it's newer. It's funny to say newer about Protean Hulk, but it kind of is with some of those decks. We're kind of deficient talking about that in this area, and I definitely think there are probably some Protean Hulk decks that have emerged. Maybe they use some of the same commanders, but maybe they don't. And so, you know.
I haven't even seen Protean Hulk be played yet, now that you mention it.
Yeah, I've seen maybe like it only once or twice. It's super degenerate. So is a lot of this stuff. And I also want to say there's going to be some variation in the build. So I'm going to, you know, try and talk about just the most common things that these decks do. But, you know, we're going to talk about Thrasios as the first one. And already Thrasios has a ton of different builds because he's a partner commander.
Yeah.
And you'll see a Thrasios Kaidel, a Thrasios Vial Smasher, Thrasios Timna, even Thrasios Tana as sort of competitive EDH decks. They're all doing similar things, but they're all not doing exactly the same things, especially as sort of the periphery stuff that it can do. So, you know, we may not talk about the exact build that you're familiar with, but I think the general idea of the decks is usually similar. So,
yeah, another big thing to note is that these are, in general, very expensive decks. They're decks that want to go off on turn two or three, which means that they can never stumble on a land. They can never put a comes into play land, comes into tapped land. And they're also using cards from Legacy and Vintage, and they all have a lot of tutors, which is why they're so lethal. It's because they're able to be very consistent and always get out the key pieces to their deck. So all of these cards, obviously, amongst the most powerful cards in Magic. So as a result, amongst the most expensive as well.
Yeah, and a lot of times they're running the really expensive disruption too. So Force of Will, Pact of Negation, the mana drains, just that stuff that's sort of occupies the mythological area of Magic of the really expensive cards. So that's going to be something that a lot of these decks share because, again, like you said, they just have to be the fastest, most efficient thing possible. And you'll notice a lot of these decks are built around specific cards that aren't commanders. And so that's one of the reasons for the tutors, because most of them are trying to combo off in some way. Almost all of them, basically. Okay, so let's dive right into the first most powerful deck. It is Thrasios, as I said. You compare Thrasios with a number of other partners. We're going to talk mostly about Thrasios because he's the key to the strategy.
Yep.
Thrasios is a green and a blue for a 1/3 legendary creature, Merfolk Wizard. Has an ability, you pay 4, and then you scry 1, and then reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, otherwise draw a card. Thrasios also has partner, which I've mentioned already. Turns out this is an insanely powerful ability, and there's a couple of reasons why. The main reason, I think, is that it costs 4 colorless mana. It doesn't tap Thrasios, so you can activate it as many times as you have 4 colorless mana. And the fact that it's colorless mana really kind of takes the restriction away that you would normally have of not being able to
do this multiple times in the turn.
And specifically infinite times.
Yeah.
So Thrasios lets you draw your entire deck if you ever make infinite mana. Like, you don't need another piece to sort of do something. And creating infinite mana is a thing a lot of decks want to do. In fact, most of the most powerful decks at some point want to create infinite mana. And then you're trying to find a way to use it. Well, Thrasios gives you that just automatically on your commander. And so that's one of the reasons that he's so, so powerful. He does put lands into play, so you're not drawing the lands.
Yeah.
The lands come into play tapped. There are some ways to abuse that, but most Thrasios decks don't really care. They're just trying to go infinite with mana, so they guaranteed draw their entire deck. And then once they do that, they have a few ways to sort of capitalize and win. Because remember, at that point, you have infinite mana and you have all your cards in your hand. So almost most decks will be able to win from that point if they want to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you better be able to win in that case. You shouldn't build a deck that can purposely draw its entire deck and then not do anything with it.
Yeah, especially once it has infinite mana. Like, you could cast everything most at that point. So the win condition you see the most, I think, is probably Blue Sun Zenith. And that card is blue, 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 and X. And then target player draws X cards. And then, and this is important, you shuffle Blue Sun Zenith into its owner's library. So you get infinite mana with Thrasios. You draw your entire deck. And now you can cast Blue Sun Zenith for infinite, for, you know, 300 on Jimmy. He can't draw 300 cards. He dies.
Wait.
Thing is, Blue Sun Zenith resolves, doesn't go to the graveyard, goes back into your library. You've drawn your entire deck, so now it's on top of your deck. You activate Thrasios, draw that card back in your hand, cast it again, kill, knock out every person in the game with Blue Sun Zenith. That requires some specific things because you do need 3 blue mana to cast, but usually Thrasios has a bunch of ways to sort of create colored mana as well. We'll talk about that.
Also, when you're able to draw your entire deck, you're going to draw your Force of Will and your Pact of Negation. So yep.
You can protect it.
You pretty much, I mean, like, you probably only need one real counterspell to stop it. You definitely don't need more than three if there's four players at the table, but one is almost always enough, I found.
I mean, if you're playing in a competitive scene, though, the other players all have Force of Will and Pact of Negations in right. their deck, too. So you're going to need a lot of disruption, but it's in blue, and you're going to have your entire deck in your hand. So your chances of being able to protect it are very high.
Yeah.
Another weird way that I read about, I haven't actually seen this happen, but when I was doing research for this episode, I read about a pretty convoluted way to win that's not Blue Sun Zenith. So you use Time Twister, Reality Shift, and Beast Within. And so Time Twister is one of the power nine, but it's actually not banned in Commander.
Right.
And what everybody does is they shuffle their graveyard, graveyard and hand into their library, and then draw seven new cards. Mm-hmm. So, but again, you're Thrasios, and you've already created infinite mana at this point, so you're always drawing your entire hand. So you have Time Twister in your hand again every time you cast it. And what you do is you cast Reality Shift on their creature. That makes them manifest the top card of their library. You cast Time Twister. That creature's still out. You Reality Shift. Exiles target creature, and then they manifest.
Oh, right.
And you basically exile their entire library slowly. But because you can demonstrate the loop, you can do it over and over again. And Beast Within allows you to turn things into creatures to allow you to start the Reality Shift thing going. And so
that is super convoluted.
Right? But once you demonstrate the loop, it's like, I turn that into a beast. Now I exile it, and you flip the top card and manifest it. Then I Time Twister, Reality Shift again. Top card.
Something to exile.
Yeah, exile everything off. You also have Cyclonic Rift in your deck. If something weird happens and you need to just get rid of all the tokens, the Beast Within tokens, you can do that. That's a really weird one. But because of Time Twister, you can just constantly reuse the same cards. And once you have infinite mana, you can just do that all over and over again. Really
right,
weird.
Right. So you already know exactly where you're going to be able to draw and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's so...
It's an interesting win condition.
It's so convoluted.
So Thrasios really wants infinite mana, right? Because all this stuff requires infinite mana. Once you have infinite mana, you don't need anything else. You just need your commander, and then you're mm-hmm. going to draw into all the other pieces you need because you're going to draw your deck. So the main point of the entire deck is to create infinite mana as soon as possible.
Easy.
It's actually pretty easy. Creating infinite mana is not super hard.
It just costs money. Let's not kid around.
I mean, some of these aren't super expensive either, but if you want to have enough redundancy in your deck...
You have to have every single...
Yeah, yeah, but a lot of these are not super expensive, right? So the first one...
Might be the most expensive, actually.
Yeah. So the first combo I've got down is Basalt Monolith or Grim Monolith. Both of these are artifacts that tap for 3 mana, but you have to pay a price to untap them. And usually, you either lose mana on that exchange or you break even. So the Basalt Monolith taps for 3 mana, but you have to pay 3 mana to untap it. So you're kind of like...
It's like in getting an early investment of a nice bump of mana, but later down the road, if you want to use it again, you have to find the open mana to untap it.
Right. But there's a card from Antiquities called Power Artifact.
Yeah, this thing is $100 plus. It's been, obviously you can't read the text that's on it, but it now reads, blue, enchantment aura, enchant artifact. Enchanted artifacts activated abilities cost 2 less to activate, and this effect can't reduce the amount of mana it costs to less than 1 mana. So all of a sudden, Basalt Monolith costs 3 mana to untap and creates 3 mana, but now it costs 1 mana to untap but still creates 3 mana. So
you tap it for 3, pay 1 of it to untap. Each time you're getting 2 mana. So that's infinite mana right there with Thrasios, boom. Power Artifact. Boom, you're already drawing your entire deck right there.
2-card combo.
Yeah, works with Grim Monolith too. That costs 4 to untap, but...
You just
Power Artifact
one.
Makes it 2, yeah. And you make 1 mana on the exchange. As long as you're coming out 1 mana ahead and you can do something infinitely, then you're going to be ahead on mana. The second combo also uses Basalt Monolith, and it is paired with Rings of Brighthearth. So Rings of Brighthearth says whenever you activate an ability, if it isn't a mana ability, you can pay 2, and if you do copy that ability, you can choose new targets for the copy. Now... This gets confusing because Basalt Monolith taps for 3 mana. That is a mana ability.
Yes.
However, untapping Basalt Monolith, which costs 3 mana, is not a mana ability, and that's the ability you're copying. So for you tap it, you create 3, you pay 3 to untap it, and then you pay 2 to untap it a second time, and in between those two triggers, you tap it. So for 5 mana, you're making 6 mana.
Yep.
And now you've created infinite mana. Yeah, that's the Rings of Brighthearth Basalt Monolith combo.
Rings of Brighthearth in general, just a very good commander card. So.
Yep. Isochron Scepter is another one.
This is my favorite of all of them because yeah. the card that it uses it with is just like the grossest.
This is not an expensive combo.
In fact, people all laughed at how bad this card was.
Yeah. So you combine Isochron Scepter with Dramatic Reversal. Isochron Scepter is an artifact. It costs 2. It has imprint. So when Isochron Scepter enters the battlefield, you can exile an instant card from your hand with converted mana cost 2 or less. And then you pay 2 and you tap the Isochron Scepter and you may copy the exiled card. And if you do, you may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. So basically Isochron Scepter it imprints an instant and then you can cast that as many times as you want, just tapping the Isochron Scepter for 2 every time you do. So yeah. Lots of people put like Brainstorm on this and then they can just kind of brainstorm every turn for 2.
Even Counterspell.
Counterspell is great.
Yeah. And I've seen this done in Limited too, which is really brutal.
Yeah. I remember when we were playing Eternal Masters, I got an Isochron Scepter with a Counterspell on it against Kenji.
Game over. Won, right?
Game over.
Yeah, you're perfect.
I beat him twice.
Ooh, perfect winning streak.
No, it's not perfect. He did beat me once. I'm up 2-1 in the Lifetime
that's
series.
Still pretty good.
Yeah.
Still pretty good.
So the card that you put onto the Isochron Scepter to create infinite mana is...
Dramatic Reversal, a random common from Kaladesh. For 1 in the blue, it's an instant. Untap all non-land permanents you control. All this means is because Isochron Scepter is also a non-land permanent, when you pay 2 and tap it, you're going to cast Dramatic Reversal, and then Dramatic Reversal is going to untap the Isochron Scepter. And as long as you're able to produce 3 mana from any number of rocks...
Assault Monolith again will do it.
Yeah.
Gilded Lotus, Thrawn Dynamo.
Over and over and over again. Gilded Lotus would be great here because then you can create any amount of colored mana that you want as well.
Now, those are expensive rocks. You're probably going to be wanting to use the cheap ones in competitive EDH, but Grim Monolith, Assault Monolith, Mana Vault, there's a ton. Or just more than one rock.
Yep.
Because it'll untap all your rocks.
Soaring Signet.
Yep. So very, very powerful way to create infinite mana. Now, the ones that are
very
paired...
Very dramatic way, Josh.
Very dramatic way to reverse your current fortunes. Another way that a lot of these decks use, and this can be with Kaidel either as the partner commander or not. She can be in the deck. Mm-hmm. You can use Kaidel with either Umbral Mantle or Staff of Domination. So Kaidel... is a legendary creature. She's a 2/3. She costs 2 green blue. You tap her and add a colorless mana to your mana pool for each card you've drawn this turn. So if you can brainstorm or do something else where all of a sudden she's tapping for 3 or 4 mana, then you can combine her with the Umbral Mantle or the Staff of Domination.
Umbral Mantle is a 3-drop artifact, and it says, equip creature has, pay 3, then this creature gets, then the untap symbol. So it's very few cards have this, but instead of tapping it to get in the villa, you're untapping it. This creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, and the equip cost is 0.
So you don't care about the +2/+2 as much, but you're paying 3 to untap Kaidel. So if she ever taps for 4, you just tap for 4, pay 3 of it to untap her, and then tap for 4, play 3 of it to untap her, and it's the same thing, right? You're just going around that same merry-go-round and creating infinite mana. Staff of Domination is very similar. It's not equipment, but it's a 3-cost artifact. It has a bunch of abilities, but the one that's important is you can pay 3 and tap the... 3 and tap the Staff of Domination to untap target creature, and then you can also pay 1 to untap the Staff of Domination. And so what you can do is you pay 3, untap Kaidel, pay 1, untap the Staff. So in this case, Kaidel would have to tap for at least 5 mana for you to come out ahead. So you'd have to have drawn 5 cards that turn. Very doable. Again, you're in blue, so you have ways to just draw a bunch of cards really quick and then do that.
Kaidel in general too is just very powerful.
Yeah, and then
I reference you to the Game Nights episode where you went off with her.
Yeah, I basically did similar things to this, not the same. I should say that on Game Nights I played a Kaidel deck that did not have Thrasios and a Thrasios deck that did not have Kaidel, but neither of them were the competitive versions.
Yeah,
we're talking about here.
Partner commanders are very good. Yeah. I'll just say that much.
So another way that a Thrasios deck can sort of... This is less infinite, necessarily. I mean, you can go infinite with it, but you don't have to, which is Paradox Engine. And remember, because Thrasios allows you to get all your cards into your hand, a lot of times Paradox Engine gets played as the way to allow you to create infinite colored mana.
Yeah.
Right? So I get infinite mana. I draw my entire deck, but I can't cast Blue Sun Zenith a bunch of time because I don't have enough blue mana. But because I've drawn my entire deck and I have infinite amount of colorless mana, now I can drop my Gilded Lotus, my Paradox Engine, a few other rocks, And I cast another spell, and Paradox Engine, I should read it, 5 mana cost artifact, legendary artifact. Whenever you cast a spell, untap all non-land permanents you control. Yeah, and you don't have to go infinite necessarily with it. You can just, you know, cast 4 or 5 spells, untap all your stuff, and every time you're doing that, you're tapping them again for more mana, and suddenly create all the blue mana you need to play your Blue Sun Zenith. And of course, every time you play Blue Sun Zenith, you untap everything. Yeah. So I guess it does kind of go infinite in that case.
One thing that's interesting is that you've used all of these cards in game nights, but
never all at once.
Yeah. But it just shows how powerful they are.
Well,
and obviously, they're very
good. I haven't used power artifact because I don't actually have one. Yeah.
You know, the only person in our play group that would use that would probably be Craig. Yeah.
Yeah. He has all those old cards. And Craig has used the Basalt Monolith Rings of Brighthearth combo on me a few times. So.
Yeah, in his Memnarch deck. I believe. And there's also, you know, notably, what is the card? I keep forgetting the name, but you can filter mana into it to get colored mana.
Yeah, it's like Gemstone Array
Gemstone Array. That's obviously very good in a deck that wants to make colored mana. But for the most part, these decks are more just concerned about just getting infinite mana, drawing their deck, Lab Maniac, whatever, winning like that.
So that is kind of how the general Thrasios deck works. Just get infinite mana and then mill everybody with one of those cards, Blue Suns or some weird Time Twister combo, which I liked when I saw it, but I haven't actually seen that in person. I did want to point out, because there's a cool combo that the Vial Smasher version kind of runs.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about this really quick. It runs a card called Morsel Hoarder. So that's 4 and then 2 hybrid red greens. So 6 mana total for a 6/4 elemental. It comes into play with 2 -1 counters on it, and then you can remove a -1 counter from it to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. It also plays Devoted Druid,
right,
which is a card that it's a mana dork. You can tap it to add green, and you can put a -1 counter on Devoted Druid to untap the Devoted Druid, right? So, and then it plays Necrotic Ooze, which is a creature that says as long as it's on the battlefield, it has all activated abilities of all creature cards in all graveyards. So what you try to do is get Morsel Hoarder, Devoted Druid into your graveyard. There's probably a little more dredge in this type of strategy where you're dumping a bunch of stuff in. And so Necrotic Ooze has the abilities of both the Morsel Hoarder and the Devoted Druid. And what you can do is remove a -1 counter to create a mana of any color. Then you can
Tap it
for mana for a green, put a -1 counter on it with Devoted Druid to untap it, remove the counter with Morsel Hoarder to make a mana, tap it, and you can create unlimited mana, infinite mana that way, which I thought was kind of cool. Again, this is not one I've seen in person. But
as a result, 50% of that infinite mana is green, though.
That's true, but I mean...
It doesn't matter at that point.
Yeah. The other... Well, is there a 50% of infinite? No, there's not.
It's just infinite.
It's just infinite.
All right, so Thrasios, that is a quick breakdown on him. Or her. Either way, Thrasios is a very powerful commander. In fact, I'd say if you're like looking to build just a partner commander, or you want to start off with a deck that maybe you don't know exactly what direction it's going, but you know what colors you want to be in, playing a Thrasios, just having the ability to get extra cards and all that stuff is great across the board. So even though it is quite the infinite beast, also pretty good for any casual players as well.
Yeah, I think Thrasios is one of those cards that just, if I have those colors in that deck, it's going into those decks. Like, I just use it in almost everything. Because there's very often times where you just kind of want to hold up mana in case, and it allows you to use it, even if you're not going infinite. It's just very efficient and very good.
And you're drawing the cards before your turn, all that good stuff.
You're ramping, too, if you happen to be a land. It's very good.
Yeah.
This next deck is kind of an old deck in our playgroup. There was a time when there was a couple of these decks early on. They weren't super, super tuned, but they did have this combo in it that it's built around. Tuned version of these decks are extremely powerful, can sometimes go off as early as turn 2.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. It's the Prosh Food Chain decks. So Prosh, Sky Raider of Kerr, is a commander that costs 3 and Jund, black, red, and green. It's a 5/5 flying dragon, legendary creature, of course.
I'll take it.
Yeah. When you cast Prosh, you put X 0/1 red kobold tokens onto the battlefield, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast Prosh. So it scales with with your commander tax.
Yeah.
So Prosh costs 6 the first time, you get 6 kobolds. If he dies or whatever and you cast him the second time, you pay 8 mana, you get 8 kobolds. And Prosh also has the text, you can sacrifice another creature and Prosh gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
Yeah. So Prosh, very good because he has a sacrifice outlet on him.
Because of the +1 he gets. That rarely matters. But the fact that you can get rid of your creatures and sort of recycle them and reuse them at instant speed for no cost, just a free sack outlet is very, very powerful.
This is also one of the first big examples of how Wizards started adding in special sort of additional text to make cards better for Commander. And Prosh is one of those, like, well, look, now that every time you cast him, you get something else. Now, the card that goes infinite with is one that I love very much. It's Food Chain, 2 and a green for an enchantment. And Food Chain, very old but very powerful. Exile a creature you control. Add X mana of any one color to your mana pool, where X is the exiled creature's converted mana cost, plus 1. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. So the idea is that you're feeding in a creature, it takes it, spits out 1 mana extra of its CMC.
And so you then go up the food chain.
Up the food chain, yeah.
Yeah, so you can sacrifice a 4-drop and then play a 5-drop. The thing is, with commanders, because when you sacrifice them to food chain, you can choose to put them back into the command zone. Now, all of a sudden, you can cast it again.
Well, you're exiling a creature you control, so you definitely can put it back in the command zone.
Exactly. And then, so you can sort of use your commander to, you know, go up the chain more than you normally would. Now, commander tax is 2 more every time, so food chain only gives you 1 more every time. However,
darn, if only there were more creatures to exile.
Yeah, Prosh comes in with a bunch of kobolds, which you can sacrifice each kobold for 1 mana because they're 0 CMC. And so once you get Prosh out with Food Chain, you're going up the chain big time because you cast them for 6, get 6 kobolds, sack the 6 kobolds to the Food Chain and Prosh. That's a total of 12 mana. Actually, sorry, 13 mana that you get. And now you use 8 of it to cast Prosh again and you get 8 kobolds. And now you do that again, and you have infinite mana. Now you can only use this mana to cast creature spells, which gets a little dicey, but you're usually tutoring for a card or finding a card that wins based on just the recycling of Prosh over and over.
Right.
The 2 big ones are Purphoros and Blood Artist. Purphoros triggers anytime a creature enters the battlefield and does 2 damage to each of your opponent. So if you have Purphoros out, you get the food chain thing going, you're going to win because you're like, cast Prosh, plus 6 kobolds, that's 7, that's 14 damage to everybody. Sack them in all the kobolds, cast them again.
Yep.
Now that's 9 creatures, that's 18 more damage to everybody. Do it again, everyone's dead. Blood Artist takes a little bit more time. Doesn't matter because you're infinite. Because it deals damage to an opponent. It drains an opponent, sorry, each time a creature dies.
Yeah, and you have to be a little more careful because you can't use the food chain trigger to trigger Blood Artist. You have to be sacking them with Prosh. But like we said, you don't even need to sack all your kobolds with Prosh for the first time to recast them out of the command zone. You just need 1 and Prosh.
What you do is you get infinite mana, and you get to the point where, okay, I'm casting Prosh for the, you know, 7 millionth time. That's making 7 million kobolds. And now on this time, I'm actually just going to sack the kobolds to Prosh because the Blood Artist is out and deal 1 million to you, 1 million to you, 1 million to you, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Yeah. So the way to sort of go off on turn 2, which is rare, you have to have a good starting hand, but if you play a turn 1 mana dork, like a Birds of Paradise, turn 2 with the mana dork, you play a land, now you have 3 mana, you play Food Chain, sack the mana dork, get 2 mana, pass a 2-drop, sack it, get 3 mana, cast a 3-drop, and you can get to Prosh, play it, and possibly go off on that turn, because Purphoros and Blood Artist do both count as creatures if you had them in your hand, or you maybe had a Sadisi or some way to with a creature to go get them.
Yeah, the only problem here is that obviously when you are, you know, if you have to sack the Blood Artist to get to 3, and you have to sack the Purphoros to get to 5, then you're not in a great position. Yeah. But again, this deck would run Eternal Witnesses and like Sadisis and stuff, so you're going to have tutors and stuff in your hand. Once you're creating infinite mana with Food Chain, all your creatures that you can cast at that point, as long as you're able to draw off of them, you're pretty much you're in much better shape. But you do have to have a killer opening hand.
And you really, really have to not get countered, because what people can do is wait until Prosh costs a bunch and then counter you there. And if they get rid of Food Chain or whatever, if you can't continue the cycle in that turn, a lot of times Prosh is just uncastable for you the rest of the game and you can't go off again, so it can get kind of dicey.
It's like, I'm sorry, your Prosh now costs 1 million mana.
Yeah. How are you ever going to get up to that? You know? Yeah. So but it's a very, very powerful deck. Food Chain in general, just one of the most powerful cards in the history of Magic. It's a mainstay in Legacy and stuff like that. So
yeah. The big thing, though, is having a finisher. And in some decks, they'll just get haste on Prosh and have him swing in for 1 billion and kill 1 person at a time. Other times, you'll have something like Impact Tremors. But again, they're not creature-based, so it's a little bit hard to go off if you're trying to use Food Chain specifically.
So the next deck that we're going to talk about is also a Food Chain deck. This is General Tazri.
Tutor on a stick.
Yep. General Tazri is 4 and a white for a legendary creature, human ally, a 4-3. When General Tazri enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an ally creature card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. So when you play Tazri, you go find an ally. You tutor for an ally, and it goes into your hand. You can also pay Wooburg, and it says ally creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of colors among those creatures. That ability never matters. The competitive Tazri decks never use the Wooburg thing. They're just using Tazri as a tutor to find a specific creature, actually. So what the Tazri decks usually do is they take advantage of the fact that they're Wooburg, and they'll play Food Chain with a couple of creatures, with a couple of creatures or a few creatures that you can cast from exile. And the two big ones are Mist Hollow Griffin, which is 2 blue-blue for a flying 3/3, but it says you may cast Mist Hollow Griffin from exile. So if it's ever in exile, you just pay 2 blue-blue and get back on the battlefield. And then they also will play something like Eternal Scourge, which is a 3-mana 3/3 that has the same thing. You may cast it from exile. It also says when it becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you exile it. That doesn't matter as much probably when you're going off. So with Food Chain, because Food Chain, when you sack the creature to it, it exiles it. If you have either one of these creatures out, you sack it, you make that much mana +1, you use that mana -1 to cast it again, sack it every time you're making one mana, just like Thrasios, kind of how we're saying, anytime you can demonstrate a loop where you're up one mana,
you have infinite mana.
So right there, you have infinite mana with Eternal Scourge or Mist Hollow Griffin. And once you have that going, you play Tazri, and you go find Colostria Healer, which is an ally.
Yeah, Colostria Healer. Again, another 2
limited
mana
all-star.
Common. Yeah, yeah, this card is nuts. 1 and a black for a 1/2 creature, vampire, cleric, ally. Whenever Colostria Healer or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. So it's each opponent on this one.
And then what you do is, once you have Colostria Healer out, you loop Tazri with Food Chain.
Right. So Tazri exiles, cast Colostria Healer, boop, out, cast Colostria, boop.
And you demonstrate, well, I can cast Tazri infinite times, and every time that's going to trigger Colostria Healer and drain you guys, and I'm going to drain everybody out.
Yeah. This is why instant speed answers are good, by the way. Now, obviously, Tazri can play blue. But,
yep.
But knowing...
That's another reason that deck is so good, is because Tazri can play the Force of Wills and the Pact of Negations. And
I'd say Prosh actually has the biggest weakness, because it's already a 6-cast commander. And for someone like Tazri, there's, you know, having 5 colors means you just have access to other ways to stop people from pathing your Colostria Healer. Or stealing it, doing whatever else. But again, instant speed is usually how you try and get around infinite combos.
Yeah, the Tazri decks are actually pretty hard to disrupt because all the pieces don't care if they're in exile, too.
Yeah, so even except if for the Colostria Healer.
Yeah, except for the Healer. And it'll play, they'll play Rift Sweeper and some other stuff in their deck to go get it. But yeah, even if you stop it, a lot of times if you stop a combo, they're in trouble after that. But this deck is resilient to be able to try and go off the next turn or the next turn if Food Chain's still out, or, you know, if they can get it back and things like that. So
yeah, the fact that you can keep getting the Eternal Scourge or the Mist Hollow Griffin back is really powerful.
All right, so let's talk about our fourth most powerful. These aren't actually necessarily in like 1 to 5, by the way. They're just 5 of the most powerful decks.
Right, right.
It's the Teferi Chain Veil deck. Teferi, the Planeswalker, which was in, what year was that?
Commander, 2014.
Jeez.
How the time has, actually, I think this was the first Commander decks that came out when we started
this
podcast.
This is the first ones we reviewed on the show.
Yeah, because before that was the Prosh year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you recall, they did a series of monocolored Commander decks, and each one had a Planeswalker, and the Planeswalker had the text that it could be your commander. So there's 5 Planeswalkers, 1 in each color, that are allowed to be your commander. And Teferi, Temporal Archmage, is the blue one. It's 4 blue-blue.
For a lot of text.
For a 5 loyalty Planeswalker. It's +1. You can look at the top 2 cards of your library and then put one of them into your hand and the other onto the bottom of your library. So you get to choose between the top 2 cards of your library. You draw one. That's +1. It's -1 is untap up to 4 target permanents. So you can untap 4 lands. It's -10. Again, the deck doesn't care about this, but it is there. You can get an emblem, and it allows you to activate the abilities of Planeswalkers
at instant speed.
On other players' turn at instant speed. So your Planeswalkers become crazy, and you usually play if you want that ultimate, it's usually in a Super Friends deck. But this is not a Super Friends deck. The Teferi deck that we're talking about here. It's a Chain Veil deck.
Yeah, Chain Veil, 4-mana artifact, legendary artifact. So you can only have one out at a time, just so you know. at the beginning of your end step, if you didn't activate a loyalty ability of a Planeswalker this turn, you lose 2 life. Not relevant. Pay 4 and tap the Chain Veil. For each Planeswalker you control, you may activate one of its loyalty abilities once this turn, as though none of its loyalty abilities have been activated this turn. So, Planeswalkers, in order to keep them not busted, and the reason that Teferi has such a weird, crazy ultimate, is you can only use them once per turn at sorcery speed on your turn. So, right. Chain Veil for 4 mana and tapping the artifact lets you reuse the ability. Now, obviously, Teferi untap stuff.
Right, so Teferi's minus ability untaps up to 4 target permanents. One of them is the Chain Veil. The other 3 are large mana rocks. So Teferi likes to play rocks, kind of like Thrasios, that tap for like 3+ mana.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be the Basalt Monoliths, the Grim Monoliths, and that's really what you want. Mana Vaults, things that are tough to untap, because Teferi can just easily untap them with the minus ability. And so what you do is... you tap all your artifacts, your big artifacts. Maybe you create 9 mana. You tap the Chain Veil. You use 4 of that mana to activate it, targeting Teferi. Now Teferi can minus, untap all that stuff. Now you're up 5 mana on that exchange. Mm-hmm. You're not technically infinite, but you're close, right? Because you do that again, you do that again, you do that again. Teferi dies.
Yep.
Teferi goes to your command zone. You've got all this extra mana you created. You cast Teferi again. That's a new permanent. I activate it, untap stuff.
Yeah.
Start again, start again, start again. It gets to the point where because of commander tax, I think like mathematically you could get to the point where you're not actually making mana on that exchange, but that's a long way off.
Yeah, not to mention if you have enough mana, you can start using it to also tick Teferi upwards. I'm sure there's some kind of math that works.
Well, that's what happens, right? You get to the point where, okay, I'm not infinite, but I have a few thousand mana.
Yeah.
Now I'm just using Teferi to... I can plus Teferi with Chain Veil, go find something like Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Right, and then use that to get his ultimate.
Yeah, and I've got tons of mana and everything, and then so what I'm doing is I'm now using Chain Veil and stuff with Jace to get his ultimate to... And again, this is another get infinite mana or near infinite. Draw your entire deck. You're always going to find the pieces you need.
Yeah.
Once you got those pieces in place, you know... Now use that to actually use Jace the Mind Sculptor to mill everyone out. Jace's ultimate is that target player exiles their entire library and then their hand becomes their library. So first of all, they have no cards in hand and their library is very small. And then if you can activate it again, which because of Chain Veil, you can.
Right.
You
just do it
now
twice
to
a single player.
Yeah, now you exile and they're gone. And then you do the next player, the next player, the next player. Obviously, this combo requires a couple more pieces. But the key point is once you get Teferi going, you can draw into them because you can draw, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Teferi, he's mono blue, so you can get the Power Artifact, Basalt, Grim Monolith combo. You can play Blue Sun Zenith. You can do a lot of different things. I actually like Teferi a lot because it requires a pretty specific setup to get going. But again, being in mono blue, you have pretty much all you need to be able to get there and protect it.
Yeah, and protect it. That's a really good point, right? Still plays all the
force of wills
and stuff to protect their combo. Okay. Moving on to the last one we're going to talk about today. It's one we've mentioned on the show, but we never went in depth. It's Xur the Enchanter, and this is the Xur Doomsday deck.
Talk about this deck all the time.
Yeah, this one I played against a few times. It's very powerful and tough to beat, and it's also very tough to play. So Xur Doomsday is... Well, let's read Xur really quick. So Xur costs 1 in Esper, 4 mana total, 1 white, blue, black for a flying 1/4 human wizard. Whenever Xur attacks, you may search your library for an enchantment card with converted mana cost 3 or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you do, shuffle your library. So it tutors and plays an exactly 3 CMC enchantment. Very powerful, but the competitive lists, funnily enough, run very few enchantments. Mostly, Xur is there to find one specific enchantment, Necropotence. And honestly, the super highly tuned competitive Xur decks don't even play Xur most of the time. They're kind of like in trouble if they have to play Xur. They're on like, you know, well, something's gone wrong
right.
if they do it. But it is nice to have your plan like D or plan B be that I can still go get Necropotence and still make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Doomsday is really the key card in the deck.
Yeah, Doomsday is a black sorcery. This is what you're searching up with Necropotence. Hope you have a lot of black mana. Search your library and graveyard for 5 cards and exile the rest. Put the chosen cards on top of your library in any order, and you lose half of your life rounded up. So even if you're at like 2 life because of Necropotence, you just go down to 1. So you can never die from that part of Doomsday. Unless you're at 1, right?
Well, I mean, you don't have to use Necropotence to find it. You could Demonic Tutor or something. Necropotence is just sort of a backup way to find it if you have to, but there's a lot of ways in the deck to find Doomsday.
Yeah.
And it plays a lot of rituals, so you might even Dark Ritual Doomsday. And now you can stack your deck to basically win the same turn. You need a couple of things. You need a cantrip. You usually are sort of cantripping and in response doing stuff. It gets convoluted. Here's how you want to stack your deck, though. Doomsday, again, you're going to put 5 cards onto the top of your deck, and everything else is gone.
Not
right?
to mention, you can search your graveyard, which makes this even harder to stop.
Yep.
Unless you're exiling cards out of people's hands.
Right. So the 5 cards you put in order, the bottom card is Lab Maniac. The card above that is Yawgmoth's Will. The card above that is Jataxian Probe. The card above that is Lion's Eye Diamond. And the card above that is Gush.
All right, so let's talk about these. Gush is a 5 mana instant that draws you 2 cards. However, you may return 2 islands you control to their owner's hand rather than paying Gush's mana cost. So you can essentially play this for free and then draw 2 cards, which means you will be drawing Lion's Eye Diamond and Gataxian Probe.
Right. Lion's Eye Diamond is a 0-cost artifact. You can sacrifice it, and then you have to discard your hand, but you get 3 mana of any color.
Right. So
it's Black Lotus, but with discard your entire hand on it.
Right. You also have Jataxian Probe underneath that, so you would cast that before your Lion's Eye Diamond to draw another card out of your deck, with it, which is Yawgmoth's Will.
Now, Jataxian Probe costs 1 Phyrexian blue mana, so you can pay either a blue mana or pay 2 life to cast it. So what you do here... So far, here's where we are. You, Doomsday, you play any cantrip that gets you Gush into your hand. Now, from that point, you just need a couple of life, and you don't need any more mana. Because you can return 2 islands to your hand, play Gush. That draws you into Lion's Eye Diamond and Jataxian Probe. You can pay 2 life to cast Jataxian Probe. Maintain priority, and in response, before you've drawn the card, while it's still on the stack, you sacrifice Lion's Eye Diamond, adding 3 black mana to your mana pool. Now Jataxian Probe resolves, you draw Yawgmoth's Will, which is...
Until end of turn, you may play cards from your graveyard.
So you use the 3 black that you just created with Lion's Eye Diamond, play Yawgmoth's Will.
Yep.
Now you have access to Gush, Lion's Eye Diamond, Jataxian Probe.
Probably a lot more.
Right.
Assuming there's some more stuff in your library. Oh, actually, no. There's going to be nothing in your graveyard.
Right. There's nothing in your graveyard, and there's only Lab Maniac on top of your deck now. You play Lion's Eye Diamond, sack it because you have no hand. You create 3 blue mana. Yep. Now you play the Jataxian Probe out of the graveyard. Again, by paying 2 life, you don't have to pass any more mana. You draw the Laboratory Maniac into your hand. You've got 3 blue mana and a Gush in your graveyard. And Laboratory Maniac, which is, by the way, one of the key cards in competitive EDH that's in like most of the decks.
Especially mono blue ones that want to draw their whole deck.
Yeah, and it says if you... It's a creature. It costs 2 and a blue. It's a 2-2, but it says if you would draw a card while your library has no cards in it, you win the game. So instead of losing to mill, you win when you get milled out, right?
So you're able to cast again the Lab Maniac because of the Lion's Eye Diamond, and then because of Yawgmoth's Will, you're able to recast one of your draw spells.
You cast Gush, which is in there, and you don't have to pay mana. You just return 2 more islands, cast Gush, go to draw.
Bing!
You win. Convoluted, but once you get Doomsday, it's all academic from there.
Yeah, just because you're able to exactly set up the combo, and hopefully no one disrupts it.
Yeah, you have to be very careful because you've exiled a bunch of stuff. But it's a pretty cool combo. One thing I'll say about the Xur Doomsday deck, and it runs a card called Ad Nauseam.
Yeah,
and Ad Nauseam might be the best card in the deck. I mean, obviously the win condition is cool, but Ad Nauseam is an instant. It's 3 black, and it says reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost. But you may repeat this process any number of times. And these decks are built with super low CMCs, a bunch of 0-cost artifacts, a bunch of 1-cost cantrips, and you just draw a ton of cards with it. You don't care about life loss. You're just trying to put together your combo. And like I said, it plays rituals like Dark Ritual, High Tide, things like that. So a lot of the cards you're drawing are cards that are going to create you mana.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go off super early once you play Ad Nauseam. And another card that it plays to kind of protect itself from Ad Nauseam killing it is Angel's Grace.
Yeah, this is an instant with split second, and it basically says you can't lose the game this turn, and your opponents can't win the game this turn, but until end of turn, damage that would reduce your life total to less than one reduces it to one instead.
So now with Ad Nauseam and Angel's Grace, you get to just draw your entire deck. You can't die from it.
Yeah. However, this does not work with Necropotence, by the way, because Necropotence, I believe, is not damage. So it's very specific to Ad Nauseam. Ad Nauseam needs to be, I think you lose
life. You have to pay a life for Ad Nauseam. And Ad Nauseam, you lose life. It's, magic's weird, but that's the way it works. Yeah, that's a good point. So that allows you to sort of put together your combo. Ad Nauseam is a very cool card. Not a lot of decks can run it because they have to worry about, like, you know, a lot of times in most decks, most of our decks, I'd say, people with normal, you know, mana curves, you're like, I can draw four cards, it'll do 16 damage to me. Yeah, like, I don't want to run that card. But, you know, highly tuned decks like Xur can run it, and it's pretty cool. So that's kind of really broad strokes how those decks work. These are competitive decks. They're difficult to play, and it's difficult to know when to sort of go for it in those decks too, because there are various points when all these decks are going off where they're super vulnerable, and if they get disrupted or countered, or they lose the counterspell war, there's even some split second cards that can really screw them up. Crimson Grip can screw up a lot of these.
Crimson Grip's big, yeah.
Sudden Spoiling's another one. I don't think those cards are heavily played in competitive EDH, because those in competitive EDH, 3CMC is pretty expensive, but those are the type of cards that can mess up your combo pretty good, because they got split second and they screw you up. And usually, most of these decks, they do have some resiliency, but once they do try to go off, if you can stop them that turn, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but Xur is, again, the best person for this deck, because you can get Necropotence out with him. You can get Phyrexian Unlife, which is another similar effect to Angel's Grace, which lets you not die if you have zero life. So lots of redundancy there.
Yeah, pretty cool deck. I've definitely lost to it a few times. There's two things. So that's all the decks we're going to talk about today, but there's a couple of things I wanted to go into. We didn't want to spend, because the episode would be super long, talking about how to counter all these decks, right? But there are some things, because we get asked these kind of questions a lot from people, and competitive EDH decks are weak to a lot of similar things, and one of them is Hate Bears.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff like Thalia, the original Thalia, that is like really tough for a lot of these decks. You'll notice a lot of these decks want to cast things multiple times in a turn, cheap things. You know, think of how Doomsday Xur goes off. If you have to pay for Gush, one extra mana, pay for Jataxian, pay for Lion's Eye Diamond,
you're not going
to
go up.
You won't be able to do it. Yeah. And a lot of the decks are like that. Stuff like Praetor's Grasp is a card that searches your opponent's library for a card and exiles it. If you know they're running combo decks, you can run cards like that to just get Food Chain out of their deck, things like that.
Typically, we don't recommend playing cards like that, but if you find that you're in a very competitive meta and that's the only option you have, then...
If people are comboing off, I think it's totally fair to do that, right?
Yeah.
If their goal of their deck is to get out a specific combo, then that's a good way for you to combat it, and I would be in favor of running it. It's not very good against decks that aren't comboing off, because you're just going to lose a card they probably didn't even have in their hand. You know, it's not actually a great card. There's things like Nevermore, Meddling Mage, which can sort of help you here too, where you play it out and you name the card. They're not as good because it's something on board they can get rid of that's a little bit easier. But those are ways to sort of attack competitive decks and these decks.
And instant speed removal, though. Very, very
I'd
good.
Say split second speed you really want.
Yeah, Crossing Grip is by far the best card to stop most of these combos. Yeah, because you're just dealing with enchantments.
And Sudden Spoiling is really good, too, because it'll sort of turn, depending on what the combo is, it sort of turns off their Colossal Healer this turn or stuff like that. And they can't counter that stuff, because most of these decks are counting on you to try and counter or disrupt them, and that's why split seconds can be really good against stuff like that. Most of the time, if you're playing against other competitive decks, you have a competitive deck, so you know, most of you also have a ton of disruption, and you're just trying to look for your window to go off. So, one thing I wanted to say is, there's a YouTube channel and a podcast that's dedicated to competitive EDH. It's called Laboratory Maniacs.
There you go.
Coincidentally. So I've listened to them a little bit. Not a ton because we don't play a lot of competitive EDH, but it's nice to sort of keep up on the scene a little bit. So you can find them on YouTube and on your podcast apps like iTunes and stuff. Yep. And, you know, when you do research like I was for this episode on competitive EDH lists, they just pop up a lot because they're just really involved in that scene. So yeah, that's a place to check it out if you're so inclined.
And the name that you would call competitive EDH online as well as in subreddits and stuff is just CEDH.
Oh, yeah, lowercase CEDH.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a Reddit just for competitive EDH, and there's other areas to go to discuss that stuff. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the listeners. We would like to know what you think the most powerful deck in the format is, and maybe it's separate than what we've said here. Maybe it has Hermit Druid in there. You never know.
Oh, yeah. I didn't include any Hermit Druid decks. There are some.
There are some crazy things. I mean, like, look, this list could be 10, 12, yeah, up to 20. Up to, you know, there's a lot of tiers of competitive decks. But, yeah, let us know. And also, just what's the most powerful deck that you've ever played against? Because I'd like to know, like, hey.
Or with,
right? Because I would love to know Kitchen Table Magic. Oh, the best deck I ever played against was X.
Yeah, most of us aren't in a scene where there's a lot of competitive decks. So the most powerful deck that we've seen may not be, you know, Xur Doomsday or whatever. Yeah. And to be honest, the ones I've played against are usually at GPs and stuff.
Yep. Almost always, actually. Yeah.
Or with Cassius, because he likes to play really powerful decks.
Powerful cards, powerful decks, blinged out everything. Cassius.
He boy. Don't pull any punches, man. Yeah, bring your A punches. Game.
Yeah, exactly.
And where he gets a lot of his cards, coincidentally, is at cardkingdom.com.
At their physical store, too.
Yeah, /Command Zone. That was his LGS when he's in Seattle. Sadly, he's in New England now playing for the Patriots.
Let's not talk about it.
I'm not as sad about it as you are. Okay. But
Born and bred, Seattle. Let's go, Hawks. All right.
But if you use our Card Kingdom affiliate link, you really are supporting the show. You're really keeping the lights on here and making sure that Game Nights keeps happening. In fact, we just had our one-year birthday for Game Nights,
right,
which I put down as something we can talk about at the end step, but that's not technically outside the world of Magic, so I don't know if we should.
Oh, no.
Anyway, Game Nights is 1 year old, and part of the reason we're 1 year old is because of the support from sponsors like Card Kingdom.
Mm-hmm. And sponsors,
yeah,
like Ultra Pro. Again, you can buy Ultra Pro product at cardkingdom.com. You can just buy that at your LGS. You can go to their website and check out. They always do releases and announcements of what their next products are going to be. Obviously, like, we have these amazing Hascon mats in front of us. They're very hard to get now. But these are the cool things that, you know, you get to have from Ultra Pros. That this is incredibly high quality.
Grimlock. Yeah, I got
really
want
to make this commander, by the way.
I have the Sword of Dungeons and Dragons playmat here.
Yeah.
So.
Very exciting.
Speaking of unstable.
Very unstable. Oh, some of the previews have come out as well recently, and boy, they are amazing.
That set looks amazing.
Yeah, every card so far I'm just marveling at. So.
It's too early to talk about it. I still got to open all my mana drains in Iconic Masters, though. Yeah.
Good
still,
luck with that.
So excited about that.
All right, now let's move on to the end step where we talk about something outside the world of Magic. Sure, why not? Happy birthday, Game Nights. We're a year old. Although the first time we released the Game Nights, it was just called Out of the Box.
But it was on November 11th. Mm-hmm. So it's almost exactly a year old. It's like a year and a week.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy, man.
Pretty crazy.
When we did that first one, I never thought we would do like 13 in a row.
No,
after that, 12
I
in
think
row after
our
that.
Plan was just like kind of what we did with Kitchen Table Fables because they came out around the same time. It was like, let's test out a few things, see what resonates. And while we love doing Kitchen Table Fables in terms of the amount of money that costs compared to how we can do Game Nights at a more efficient, and obviously we can build a set. We don't need to go to new places every single time like we would with something, a show like that. I think it's been worth it. Now, you've spent approximately...
Oh, yeah. A couple thousand hours probably at this point.
Yeah, easily over 1,000, maybe.
It's probably over 2.
Yeah. I've spent like maybe 300 hours on it. So
at least, because you figure those days are like 12-hour days. You've probably
shooting wise, you're right. Yeah. I didn't even factor that in. But big kudos to you, Josh. You're the one that deserves the biggest birthday cake. The biggest slice of the birthday cake because you've taken the biggest slice of the work on the editing side of things.
It's definitely become a full-time job, which is crazy. I never would have thought that either, but I'm glad the response has been so good. If you haven't watched the new Game Nights, we got Wedge from the Mana Source. We got the Professor from Tolarian Community College.
What a lineup.
It's a sweet game. It's super funny, and it's pretty crazy. We're playing a wacky made-up format, mm-hmm, which is Iconic Masters 12-pack multiplayer sealed.
Yeah, I know some of you may be unhappy that it's not Commander, but honestly, this was more entertaining than any Commander game I've ever played. Just straight up.
It was a sweet game. Fun to play with those guys. I will say, while we had Wedge and Prof in town, we definitely shot another episode of Game Nights with our own Commander deck, so that will be coming out at some point in the future, you know, if you're really nice to us.
Yeah. Be nice to Josh. Send him some cake. Send him some cake with hot sauce on it.
You should also check out the Masters of Modern podcast, which is our sister podcast. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format, all things competitive magic. You can find them on collected.company right next to us, or on iTunes, Stitcher, those type of things, or on Twitter at the MMcast.
Yeah, they have to be coming up on some kind of birthday soon, right?
I think they just had their 3-year anniversary, because nice. we celebrated our 3-year podcast anniversary, didn't we? I think we did. It's all starting to blur together.
You tell us.
I think we mentioned it, at least. I hope we did. That would have been back in like June or July.
Yeah. Notably, though, we're getting close to 200. So if you guys have any fun ideas for that, let us know. Until then, make sure you also check out youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, where our editor, Terry Robertson, has all of our videos in edited form in video for our podcasts. And now he's working on game nights as well. So Terry is just branching out and doing more and more, which is awesome. Big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations that start and end the show, as well as the living card animation behind us.
Horizon Canopy. From Iconic Masters.
Very, very cool. You can find Jeffrey on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG, and he's done quality work over many years. We can't thank him enough.
All right, everybody. Thanks. Have a happy Thanksgiving if you're in the States.
That's right. And if you're not in the States, have a happy November. If you're not in the world, have a happy cosmic whatever time it is.
Happy cosmic whatever time it is.
If you don't believe in time, or time is happy not a function of your dimension, then just have
those
a good one.
Black holes keep ringing.
And if you don't abide by the number system, like ones and twos, then just have a good.
All right. Peace.
See ya.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing, to the weird, to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.